G'day, y'all, mate. It's fun to be here in Australia again. This is our third visit for Sue and I, and thank you all for inviting us to come here to your Bible school. Although I was on a Bible school committee for a number of years, and I realized you didn't really have a choice. You just take who the committee invites, and that's how it works. But hopefully we shall have a good time here this week. Maybe you'll get used to my accent. I guess as you say, I have an accent. I'm trying to get used to yours. And hopefully as the week goes on, Sue has reminded me to slow down when I talk to you because accents become a problem. And my background was teaching high school. I taught public school for 36 years, and I taught high schoolers. And they expect everything to keep moving fairly fast. So if you slow down to talk to them, they say, boring, and they want to get moving. So, yes, my general speed is a little bit faster than a lot, and so I will try my best. And if you find me going too fast, just give me the hand signals, you know, time out or slow down or something, and or say that again in Australian, and I'll try to do as you say. So, yes, our first class really is on looking at David preparing to be the king. That's the game plan, at least for today. We're going to look at how God had prepared him to be a king. And my responsibilities were to look at David and Solomon this week. And as you look at that subject, you realize that's big to, what, five classes on David and Solomon. There's no way we're going to cover the life of David or Solomon. But what we're going to try to do is look at some practical lessons from their lives that we can take home and implement in our families and our ecclesias under the general theme of trying to be kings, living as kings now and practicing to be kings in God's family forever. It's always good to start out. I used to do this in school because I wanted the kids to realize that I really was a person, not just a teacher. We do have families, and yes, in this case, that is our lovely family up there. You know Sue because she is here. Our oldest son, Stephen, right here, he married Felicity Anderson, who was from Newcastle, and that is our connection to Oz. So we come over once in a while. They got married about 8 years ago over in Sydney, and we came over for that event, and they moved here to Wollongong, to the Gong, about 2 years ago. So they're living down in the Gong right now. And Sue and I have been in the Gong for the last 11, 12 days. We're down there. And so we've got wonderful weather that we brought along with us from California. So that was awesome. So that's Stephen Fliss. Our next son, Paul, he married Mary Jane Abel. That would be Frank Abel's daughter, if you happen to know Frank, or brother of Ron. I think a lot of you probably remember Ron when he was back in Australia in the day. And they're living in Michigan still. That was where we were from, basically. And they now have a little squirt, our first edition, little granddaughter Eden, yes, that God has blessed them with. We also have Rebecca right here. We brought Rebecca with us to Australia. She's down in the Gong right now. Rebecca's 32 years old, and she has autism. So she finds it very difficult to come to a place like this and readjust her schedule and meet all these new people, and that's a lot for her to handle. So we've left her in the Gong. This was her first trip to Australia, and she loves it. And of course, she can't wait to see the Steve Irwin Zoo because that was like her identification is with animals. And so she's a typical autistic child who really loves animals, probably more than she loves all of us. But that's that's how it goes. The animals are first on her list. And we also have, next on the list is Andrew right here. Andrew is living in Indiana right now. He was with us in California. For any of you that have ever looked at LavoniaTapes.com, if you've ever used that website, years ago I used to copy tapes from Australia. I would get these tapes in from Enfield and different places, and then I would copy them on little tape copiers and then send out copies to all kinds of people in the United States and Canada. And finally, Andrew told me one day, he said, "Dad, you're just wasting your time." He said, "Tapes are gone." And he said, "You waited so long to change, don't even bother going to CDs." He said, "What you really need to do is go right straight to MP3s. I'll make you a website. We can upload them there, and everybody around the world can just download them themselves." I thought, wow, that sounds good. And he taught me how to use these little MP3 players like this that I'm recording this class on. And they'll hold 1,000 classes or more, depending on how big your little SD card is, your micro SD card you put in those things. So Andrew made that website, and that's what people do. All around our Christadelphian community, people upload classes, and then they're available for free. You just get on Livonia Tapes. He called it LivoniaTapes.com because that was our ecclesia, it was Livonia. And we were at the time, we were copying all of our old tapes that we had from Australia and some of the ones from the USA. And we are changing them into MP3s. And so that's what we did. It started out like that. But now it's up to date with a lot of current things as well. So that's Andrew, and I can thank him for that. He's supposed to be married next month. We have to get back to the USA. June 8th is his wedding, and he's getting married in Indiana to Sister Marjorie Binch. Next on the list would be, I'll have to cover Sarah up there. Sarah's, what's the point of it? Sarah is, she's right now, she's living in Dubai. You can see the connection between Sarah and Mom, of course. And she's been living in Dubai for about 3 years or so. She went over to see Steve and Fliss when they were in Dubai, and she got offered a job in Skydive Dubai and has been there since. We think that she's learning how to connect with a lot of Muslims over there and hoping to go with Abraham when Christ comes back to convert the Muslims. Very interesting concept. But somebody, hopefully, out of this day and age, and I really wonder whether God has positioned people in the latter days to actually make connections with folks all around the world that can go out with the saints of old and convert the peoples of this world when Christ comes back. It's an interesting concept to consider in the latter days. If you were angels trying to organize the setup of the kingdom, that's what we would do. We would do that currently today. And it'd be interesting to see if that in the end plays out. Youngest son is Nathan right here, and he still lives with us in California. Right now he's over in Dubai visiting Sarah. That's our family. So yes, we really do have a family. Our six kids God had blessed us with. And that's where we got to practice righteousness. That's all through our family and growing up. So that's our background. Now, you'll have to pardon our lack of slow development here in Australia. When we came to Australia, of course, Rebecca goes out looking for cereal in the morning, and we're looking for our standard cereals. We looked all over at the store for Raisin Bran and just couldn't find it, and discovered that, Sultana brand is what we have over here. So if you didn't realize that, there is no Sultana brand in the USA. But somebody came along when we were over in Busselton last year, and they told us, oh, try this. And somehow Sue and I are still having trouble getting used to that. But that Vegemite, it just doesn't seem like breakfast to us. So then we went for lunch, and of course we're looking for our old standard signs, and where's the Burger Kings around here? And we couldn't find Burger Kings anywhere. And then finally somebody told us, oh, they're not Burger Kings, they're Hungry Jacks. Oh, different name over here for the same stuff. And that's typical of what happens when you travel across the oceans. A lot of similar things, but we call them by different names. So what I'm hoping this week, at least, is that as we're taking our spiritual meals from our classes this week, I hope you won't mind if we take our spiritual meals from something I'm more used to, which is the New King James Version. I really am not very good at reading a King James Bible. Never grew up on a King James Bible and never took any Shakespearean English in my life. And to this day, I still can't really understand it when I read it. So, in fact, I think most of you can probably identify with this. If you really went back and read the King James Bible, the 1611 King James Bible, I mean, that's what it's like for me today to try to read the versions that we have. This was the original version of the King James Bible, and you can see how words are different. They're spelled differently, and fortunately, today, nobody's using this version anymore. You're using an upgraded version of the 1611 King James Bible, and that actually helps a lot of us. So that's the plan for the week as we go along, and I think most of you will follow along just fine. And I'll post those up for you to read. So those of you that don't look them up real fast, we'll try to keep the passages there for you to look at. I always found that fun myself to actually compare different versions. I'm one of those people that likes to hear different versions coming in at the same time and compare them so that you can look for differences and then try to figure out, well, where there are differences, that's usually time to have a look at which one is really a little more accurate or which one has done the best job. So the game plan for this week is to focus on lessons from David and Solomon. That's what we really want to do, and you already know the story, so that isn't a problem. So where we're going to start out this morning is having a look at how God developed David to be the king that he was and what David went through. And we'll probably spend about 3 days on David and maybe two on Solomon because there's so much more revealed about David's life. And when you go back and look at what God did with David, he really did. The angels really did control David in terms of his family and made sure that he grew up in the right family. Sometimes we don't do that. We still focus on the readings and we look at verse-by-verse expositions. It's fun to stand back sometimes and look at the bigger picture of what angels were doing in David's life. And what they did is make sure that his family was the right situation for him to be the king that God had ready for Israel. and his family situation was perfect. And when you find that out about David, what you realize is that God is doing the same thing with us today. When you look at our families, and you look at our parents, our grandparents, or you look at our children, and we look at our grandchildren, and some of you have great-grandchildren, there are no mistakes in God's plan. He brings the right children, grandchildren, into our families, the people that we need, the people that we have to work with, the people that are helping us to learn to how to develop God's righteousness and working within his family. There are no mistakes, and there's no chance to this, just as you'd see in David's family. He had the right background for what role that David was going to play. And you'll see that as you look at his family online. And what comes to all of us is lessons we take home is that there are no mistakes. Whatever children God has given us, whatever grandchildren he has brought into our families, he has reasons for that. And these are things that he's trying to teach us, how to develop patience and kindness and mercy with our children. Even for all the mistakes that they make, this is how we learn to show mercy. And we need that in our families because our natural tendency is not to be like that. So he gives us what we need in our families in order for us to be effective people in his family. This is all a huge game plan he has designed so that right now we're practicing to live in his family. This is what life is all about today, whether you're at work or whether you're at school or whether you're in a family, you're at home, you're a homemaker, and your ecclesias that you're working in, it's all practice for learning how to live with angels, to be part of God's family forever. And so what God did in David's family, when you look at the background of David's family, you can see how God brought diversity into his family. Everybody knows when you go back through David's line right here, you can come back up through and see that you've got Jesse and Obed and Boaz, of course, who's married to Ruth the Moabitess. And everybody knows that back in here we got Rahab the harlot that was back there as his great-great-grandmother. And so David understood that his family came from this Gentile background. But sometimes we don't realize that even within David's immediate family, that Jesse seems to have had another wife who was married to Nahshon, and he probably married her after Nahash died over here, and that from that you get the sons of Zeruiah, David's half-sister over here, and Abigail. And so what David had to do as he was growing up is accept the fact that he had a very broad, diverse family. He came from a very diverse background. And his brothers, when you look at the brothers that David had himself, these brothers, look at the humility that they taught him, David being a young son in the family. Those of you that were the youngest brothers, you know what it's like with the older brothers around in the family. You have a different kind of life than the people that are the older brothers in the family. And so David was being trained in learning how to accept things that he couldn't control and learning to be a humble kind of person. And all that came from David's family background. And so it's important to realize that God does the exact same thing with all of us. He's trying to develop us. He has roles for us in his family. And so what he does in this life is send his angels out to control our situations and bring about the right circumstances in our families and our ecclesias to train us to be members of his family forever. So we all know the stories that God definitely, he chose David to be the king. You see in 1 Samuel 16, in verse 7, everybody knows the passage that the Lord doesn't see as man sees, for man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart. And we know that what happened is he made the seven sons pass by. And God says, nope, none of those. But then there was the youngest. And where was he? He's out keeping the sheep. And in the end, that's the one. And Samuel then took the horn of oil and he anointed him in the midst of his brothers. All right, and it's definitely a messianic phrase right there. And the Spirit of the Lord came upon David from that day forward. And so Samuel arose and went to Ramah. And what you find with David in his life is that what a change this would be. He goes from being like the youngest in the family, the guy who's probably picked on all along in his family and really taken advantage of. He's out there taking care of the sheep. And now God's going to elevate him to be a ruler in Israel, to shepherd God's family. And this was all part of the plan. God took someone who had learned the key characteristics of ecclesial life by shepherding sheep and by growing up in a family where he probably was picked on a lot. His brothers didn't seem to like him a whole lot. And this was the background for becoming the king of Israel. So for those of you that have that in your families, or you see that happening within your families and sometimes get frustrated that, well, this isn't fair. David shouldn't have to grow up that way, that he shouldn't have had to go through that. These are the experiences of life that God brings us through to develop us, to make us prepared for the jobs that he has for us in his family. You can't take those things away, and they may seem unfair from a human perspective, but that's just our humanism. From God's perspective, these are essential. These are ways that he's developing his children. Look at how his brothers treated him. We know that at least his one brother certainly falsely accused him. When David came up to help out, and he brought what his dad asked him to, and he brought the cheeses and things to the brothers. And he's checking out and finding out in 1 Samuel 17, that at verse 26, that who's this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? And the people answered him and told him what would happen to the man who killed the Philistine. So look at what Eliab, here's his oldest brother, and he hears. And he spoke to the men, when he hears David doing this, his anger was aroused. This was the kind of relationship that David had with his brother Eliab. And so he says, "With whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness?" You know, you can imagine if you were in David's shoes, how you would feel that, you know, you only have, he's going to try to like chew you out in a sense. He's belittling David. And then he has to throw in those few sheep, like, you know, how it wasn't even an important job. But who'd you leave them with in this case? And who have you left those few sheep? And I know your pride. Talk about false accusations and the insolence of your heart, for you have come down to see the battle. And David's wondering, like, what have I done now? What did I do? It's very similar to like Joseph with his brothers. But this is what we experience in life. And although our natural tendency is to say, well, that's not fair, and a lot of us would want to jump in there and say, well, let's fix that. You know, we're going to fix Eliab so David doesn't have to live with that. This is what developed David into the man he was. This is what develops character. And so when you see this happening in your families, in your ecclesias, you don't have to like jump all up and figure, I got to fix this right away. Sometimes we need to sit back and realize God's in control of it all. He's got his angels out there working every day on our behalf, and they are the ones who will make the big decisions, not us. We don't have to control those things. We just have to watch what God's doing, learn from those things, as David did in this case. And what David did is instead of complaining about Eliab, he focused on responding the right way himself. This is what practicing righteousness is all about. You don't have to fix the other people. Instead, we work on responding the right way ourselves in family conflicts and ecclesial conflicts. And instead of constantly focusing on brother or sister so-and-so, that we want to straighten them out on this issue, what we need to do is be very careful that we have responded the right way and as Christ would, and continue to be kind and patient and merciful with these people. You look at other circumstances in David's life. Remember the incident where he went back to take up Michal, and he found out that Saul had given Michal, his daughter, to David's wife, to Palti, the son of Laish, who is from Gelim. And so this was part of David's life. He had to deal with disappointments. And again, if we were in control as angels, we'd want to fix that. We want to say, oh, let's go out there and fix that for David and get him back his wife. But that's not what the angels did. They let this happen and let this play out because David was being trained. He's being trained to accept disappointments and realize that just because we're in God's family, just because we're God's children, that doesn't mean our life is going to be easy. It doesn't mean that everything's going to be nice and smooth. I mean, this week it is. Our biggest problem is finding out how to coordinate when we stand up for the hymns. You know, and that's great when that's your biggest problem. Or making sure you took the right pills in the morning, I guess. That's also on the list. But when you look at some of the situations David went through, these were like major disappointments to him that he had to accept and sit back and realize, all right, I'm not going to go fix that problem right now, as he could have argued his case and gone in with might, taken his wife. He was very willing to accept that God's in control. There must be some reason for this. And you see the spirit of Joseph really well in the life of David. And that's what David did. He dealt with all these disappointments and just kept going. So what God does for all of us, brothers and sisters, and what we want to communicate, we go away this week really believing ourselves, is that God is in control of our families. He knows what's going on in our families. He's there. The angels are with our families every day. And if they wanted to, they could make things different. But they don't sometimes. They let things play out. And what he's doing is using our families to teach us patience and kindness and mercy and goodness and self-control, because he's using those unfair circumstances to watch how we respond. What are we doing? How are we handling it? Not so much how is the other fellow handling it and what did they do wrong, but how are we handling it? And that's what we need to do more as a community and as individuals, is focus on what am I supposed to learn from this, instead of reacting like natural human nature all the time and try to fix everybody else's problems. You know, it's the old, you can see the little speck that's in your brother's eye and you don't even realize the log that's in our own, as Jesus would put it. So what God does is he uses our families. He uses our ecclesias like this to teach us big lessons. Like, who would have ever guessed, when you go back and look at Abraham's life with Sarah and Hagar and all of that, and you watch what happened with Abraham and Sarah and Hagar, and then you watch the next generation with Jacob and Esau, and you watch that play out, did you ever realize that that all played out with angelic control? The angels prevented Sarah from having a child all those years, and let Abraham go through that whole thing with Sarah where they picked their own way, they came up with a plan, and Hagar has a child, and Abraham wants Ishmael to live in his sight. Did you realize that the angels did that just so that the Jews, for generations to come, would look back and realize that it's not by man's will, but it's by God's will that the child of the promise would come? And that he was trying to teach huge, major principles to the community, that they wanted them to realize that it's not up to us. It's not of him who runs, as Paul says in Romans 9, or him who wills, but it's God's election. It's God's choice. And Paul develops that whole issue in Romans chapter 9 and says the angels were in control of all of that, letting that play out. And they, did you notice what happened in the next generation? Just to make it clear, just so the Jews would never say, well, that's because, you know, Hagar was a slave woman. Did you realize in the next generation he let one man and one woman have twins born at the same time, and God picked Jacob and not Esau? Just so that nobody would ever miss the point. And yet we read over those stories, and I bet a lot of us have looked at that, we don't even realize that's there. That was actually in the control of the angels, and they were making some decisions like that to learn huge, major lessons. And if Paul hadn't have written it in Romans 9, I would have missed it too. I'd read it for years without realizing that's what was there. So God uses families like this to teach us lessons about how he works and how he's operating and how to be a member of his family forever. I think we see that with Joseph and his brothers. I think a lot of you would pick that out and realize that that was going on with Joseph, of how he's learning patience and kindness and mercy through all those false accusations and all the mistreatment that Joseph went through. And so when we see that happening today, we don't have to jump in there and say we're going to fix it all, as we would want to do as parents sometimes, or grandparents. Sometimes we have to realize it's in God's control, and he's using it to develop his family. And that's what he does, so that we will learn to trust God. And you see that so clearly in the lives of the patriarchs, which is probably why so much is revealed in the story of Genesis. When you look at Abraham's life and Isaac's life and Jacob's life and Joseph's life, all that is revealed so that we'll catch on to how God works in families. He tells us that in their family specifically. So when you look at some of these things that you can pick up, at least from David's life, and I'll try to summarize every so often as we go along, that God definitely taught David to accept people from different races and cultures. And that's something that's in his background, when you went back through his grandparents and his great-grandparents, and then also, you know, coming in from the others that were brought in his family through his mom's side, and his dad, when his dad married the other one and took on the wife of Naish. You know, when you look at that today, you know, and you look at how that played out later on in David's life, you realize that later on what David does, and because he was so accepting of the other cultures, you know, when you compare that in contrast with Judaism and the Jews, who, you know, in Paul's time, they didn't want to accept these Gentiles. It just was so ingrained in them to look at Gentiles as barbarians. But what David did, what God did with his family, is he let him see the advantages of having people from all different cultures and backgrounds. And then what he does is David sets up a tent for the ark in Jerusalem and brings all his Gentiles that he had accumulated in his wanderings around through the Philistine areas and running from Saul, and he brings them all into Jerusalem, the city of the great king, and they worship Yahweh, the God of Israel, in the tabernacle of David. And see, this would have never happened without all of this background that God brought David through. He was trying to expand his cultural view of who are the children of God. So when it finally came time for him to be the king, he was so accepting of all the different groups of people that worship Yahweh, the God of Israel, and so much so that when Acts 15 came along, you know that the apostles went back and referred to that specific incident. As James, when he quotes the prophet, he said, look, if God's going to rebuild the tabernacle of David in the kingdom, and the Gentiles are going to worship again together, then why can't they do it now? And that was James's argument in Acts 15. So he understood what God was doing back here with David and his family. And it's fun to look at those things of how God, you know, exposed David to that because of the plan that God had of showing the community what it was going to be like to have a house for God at some point to dwell in where all nations would come to worship. David certainly had a willing spirit to do whatever God needed to be done. And you'll see that in David's life over and over again. And being the youngest of the eight brothers, you know, he accepted his role in the family. It was certainly a very minor role. They gave him all the stuff that nobody else wanted to do. He probably had lots of bosses in his life telling him what to do all his life when he grew up. But he understood and accepted that God was in control and that God had designed this family for him. And it really, if all of us believed that, I think we'd be much more at peace with what we have in our ecclesias and our families. And he dealt with false accusations from his brothers. Then you notice how he doesn't like lash out at them and he doesn't like try to fix all that. He took it all in, like Joseph would, and he moved on. And that's what you do. It's like later on when Shimei is cursing him and he looks back and he realizes, all right, maybe God sent him to curse. And I think that's how he viewed his family as he was growing up. That's how he came to peace with what he had to deal with. And he certainly had a lot of disappointments, brothers and sisters, which you know, all of us, we look back at our families. And you all have different stories you could tell me this week about disappointments in your families. Things that happened that you didn't foresee. You didn't expect that God would do this. And you didn't realize this was going to happen. And everybody has their stories with their children, with illnesses that came in, with accidents that occurred, with divorce problems and marriage breakups and whatever. It's everyone has their stories. But what's consistent in Bible characters who are practicing to live as kings is that they consistently believe God is in control of this and that this is what he's using to develop us to live in his family forever. And so we accept those disappointments, as much and painful as they are, and we try to move forward as David does, continuing to work in God's family. Well, you can see that Sarah over in Dubai there, see, she just got on. That's our way of communicating when we go traveling. Another one of the aspects of David's life is the idea of the shepherd. I think that's fun to see that David the shepherd, when you look at what God did with him and his background, because some of us would have a tendency to say that, well, shepherding, like who cares about a shepherd? Remember, there was a brother back home in California just recently who talked about sheep and how dumb sheep were, and shepherds, like, you know, shepherd, anybody could be a shepherd, right? Because they're just keeping track of a bunch of dumb sheep. And that isn't what you get. That's not the sense you get, though, from looking at David's life. Shepherding taught him a lot about handling people. And we've learned a lot with my autistic daughter, whose favorite friends are animals, of course. And you can find a lot, though, about people just by watching animals sometimes. And I get the feeling David did that with the sheep. And you'll see other Bible characters that were shepherds the same way. You look at the 40 years, for example, that Moses spent in Midian. And a lot of us would look at Moses' life and we'd say, what a waste. You know, God took him over to Midian, waited 40 more years to redeem his people out of Egypt. What a waste that was. Well, those 40 years while he was in Midian taking care of sheep and working with those people, those were the years when he really learned how to shepherd God's people. Not so much the years when he was in Pharaoh's court and was learning all the royal stuff and making everybody obey and ruling that way like the kings of the pharaohs of Egypt, but when he was taking care of sheep and learning to be a leader, not somebody who forced people. So you see that in David's life, you know, this incident with that you see with Eliab, right? But shepherding was certainly not a waste of time. You look in Psalm 78, for example, about David. It says that God chose David, in verse 70, his servant, and took him from the sheepfolds. from following the ewes that had young, and he brought him to shepherd Jacob, his people, and Israel, his inheritance. So God looked at David's, you know, sort of like pre-king days, when he was out there taking care of the ewes that had young. I mean, that's interesting that Psalm would specifically mention that, following the ewes that had young, because this is what comes up consistently about true shepherds in the community. Real shepherds don't force everybody. They don't tell everybody what they have to do. Real shepherds are leaders, as you know probably in looking at what shepherds do. They lead their flocks. They take care of the young. They watch out for the young. And when Jesus would talk to the shepherds of Israel, when you think about what did he constantly go after them for, or what did God go after the leaders for in the prophets, it's because in ecclesial leadership, people were taking care of themselves, their own families, their friends, and they forgot to take care of the weak and the fatherless and those that had no one to stand up for them. And David learned how to do that when he was taking care of these sheep. This was not a waste of his time. This is what God values extremely high in becoming a shepherd or becoming a king in his family forever. He doesn't need people who force everybody into his ways and who tell everybody how to do stuff. He needs people who have learned with patience and kindness how to work with the young and work with the weak and work with the fatherless and work with the widows and those who had no one else to stand up for them. So when we go home, brothers and sisters, this is our time to practice this in our families. This is what God's doing with us today. It's great we can come here to the Bible school and we spend a week together and have fun like this. But when we go home, that's when it really starts. We have to go home and do things in God's family to get ready to live in his family forever. And what we do is we learn to be a shepherd like David. We learn to lead sheep so that they can follow our example. We learn to watch out for those that are having young. And we take care of those young and those mothers. And we do that in our families, in our ecclesias. Not the ones who are strong. They don't need our help. It's the ones that are weak and the fatherless and those that are the children, our young people today. They need us. And so that's what he did. That's what God did with David and taught him how to be a shepherd in the community. And then he shepherded them according to the integrity of his heart, and he guided them by the skillfulness of his hands. But David was known for defending the weak, and you'll see that about his character. So that's what we want to do when we go home, brothers and sisters, is get involved in our ecclesias and our families. We need folks who get involved, who teach our Sunday schools, who help our young brethren that are learning how to give classes. And we help out at MIC classes, and we teach them how to deliver a class, how to do Bible study. We need all of our grandpas and grandmas out there in Sunday school. You have a role to play to help the children. This is how you shepherd in God's family. This is how you practice becoming a king and a priest for God and helping to reign on earth in the age to come. This is what we need today in our community, not people who are uninvolved. We need to go home and get involved as much as possible because this is the time to practice. God's giving us opportunities to practice living in his family. Now you look also at David's character. He's certainly a man after God's own heart. You know the passages in Acts 13 when it refers back to that about how God had removed Saul and he raised up for them David as king, to whom he gave testimony and said, "I found David, the son of Jesse, a man after my own heart who will do all my will." That's part of practicing righteousness and living as a king. Living as kings now is that we have to be willing to do God's will. That's what these Bible characters all have in common. The Moseses, the Davids, the Josephs, and our Lord Jesus Christ. This was his battle to the end. Not my will, but yours be done. And that's what he did with his father and following his father and realizing that my father is right. His way is right. And so what our young people need today, what our children and our young people need to see in us is the kind of trust that we have, that we go home and we show them that we are practicing God's will. And they get to see that as a true shepherd. They watch us and they follow our example, not because we tell them they have to, but because we are there doing it as examples for them. And in doing that, we communicate to them that whatever happens in our life, whatever it is, whatever illnesses God brings, whatever family situations and ecclesial situations that occur, that God is in control, And we have to carefully watch how we respond. And these are going to be learning experiences for us to practice living in God's family. And we need to communicate that to our kids. These are not just chance experiences. These aren't just where some brother gets upset and does something, or that, you know, by chance we're a statistic and so many people develop cancer and therefore cancer's in us now or in our family. This is God in control, and our kids need to hear, our grandchildren need to hear that from us, that we really believe and we trust that this is our God, and He's doing this so that we can be in His family forever. These are just practical life lessons that God uses in our families. So you look at, for example, the carpenter, or Jesus working as a carpenter and learning how to build a house on a rock. I'm sure He would have seen that so many times instead of building on the sand. Or you look at Jacob, you know, and the experiences that Jacob went through and all the scheming that Jacob did, how he could then communicate to his children later on and say, look, you know, I tried this, I tried to do this, I tried, but you know, God was in control all along. And finally, I wrestled with the angel and begged him and cried with him and pleaded with him to save our family. And the angel promised he would. And that's the kind of trust that Jacob had learned, and he passed that then on to his children. So much so that, you know, at the end of Genesis 49, it's really interesting in terms of angels, but when Jacob was blessing Joseph's children, you remember what he did when he talked about the God of Abraham, my fathers? And he said then, and he just interchanged there, the angel who redeemed me from all adversity, blessed the lads. That angel that had been with Jacob, that he had learned to trust and had a relationship with, he actually asked that the angel would stay with his grandchildren and continue working in his family with his grandchildren. It's really fun to watch that kind of a concept, that you could have that kind of a relationship with God and with his angels, that's the trust that Jacob would have had, hoping that same angel would then stay with them in the days to come. But that's what you see in these Bible characters. So God rejected Saul for his disobedience. Everybody knows that, and you know the passages on that. When Samuel came and he talked to Saul, and Saul would say, well, I've obeyed the voice of the Lord in 1 Samuel 15. But of course, he blamed all the people, and this was typical Saul, right? But Samuel then points out to him that what God really wants from us is obedience. He doesn't need us to do great works. He just needs us to be obedient. To obey is better than sacrifice, and to heed than the fat of rams. For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry. Because you have rejected the word of the Lord, he has also rejected you from being king. Now, David would have grown up, you know, knowing that this was the case. Samuel would have talked to David and realized that Saul was rejected because of disobedience. And I think what you see with David is a man who was committed to do God's will. And this is what God was looking for. And when you take the lessons for ourselves, brethren and sisters, when we go home, that's what we want to take home with us, is our commitment. Every Sunday morning, we take the bread and we take the wine, and we reflect back on the promise that we made at our baptism. Our promise to our God that as a member of his family, we will commit to joining his son in a death to sin. That we will show forth his death to sin until he comes. Not by just taking bread and wine, but then by really doing it in our lives. By learning to be patient and kind and merciful, like our God. And that's what Bible characters did. And you'll see that as God was preparing David to be the king. So David would have been aware of these situations with Saul. You find out when he told, in this case, when you look at David's obedience to his father, I think it's fun to look at that concept of how he obeyed his father's commands. We know that when Jesse said to take the food to the army, that David just did what his dad asked for him. He had learned to practice obedience in his family. And verse 20 says there that he went as Jesse had commanded him. And that's what we want to do with our children and with our grandchildren, is we want to teach them obedience. Our families are the time to practice. And as moms and dads, we have to then carry that out in our families and work at obedience with our children. Not just because we want them to obey us. And this is part of what we have to get them to understand as our children and grandchildren are growing up. It isn't just so that you will obey me. It's because I'm trying to obey my Heavenly Father, and I want you to learn to be obedient to your parents and your grandparents so that you can transfer that obedience to your Heavenly Father one day as well. And you can see that happened in David's life. That the same obedience that he practiced with his own dad is what became the basis for him becoming obedient to his Heavenly Father. See, this is what God has done in our families. I don't know whether you stand back sometimes and analyze the game plan, but God has designed our families as the practice time. He could have had our families totally different. He could have raised us in communes. He could have had a whole different situation than a man and a woman and raising children. This was all design. He designed the whole plan in order to help us learn to live in his family. This is not just random. Our creation isn't like this with males and females just because it happened to work. No, it's by design. And this is how you learn. I mean, if you look at everything, look at the desire you have to go eat breakfast in the morning, and you grow up like that. He didn't have to make us like that. But he wanted us to learn to hunger and thirst so that we could learn to hunger and thirst for righteousness. The whole thing is a package. Our whole life is like that, designed by angels to teach us how to live in God's family. It's helpful to know that sometimes, though, when you start looking at things and realize that this it's all coming from God down. This isn't about like what works for us and what man wants to have. You know, if that were the case, you'd have divorces going on all the time and people would be going out and getting divorced and finding a new partner. But what God did is designed a way where you could practice faithfulness. And what better way to do that in a family with a husband and a wife? Practice faithfulness. Because God rates faithfulness at the top of the list. He's looking for people who are faithful before he ever gives them immortality. He can't afford to give immortality to people that aren't going to be faithful. So he lets us practice this in our families. This is what he does. And so you look back at what's happening in David's life is that David practiced obedience with his dad and as a child growing up, and then that transferred over to becoming obedience to a heavenly father. So the whole plan, the whole family situation was designed in order for us to learn how to live in God's family. And you could see it working in David's case very well. And you'll see that he inquires of the Lord then when he's in trouble, and he asks God, what should I do? And he does so. In 2 Samuel 5 there at verse 25, David did so as the Lord commanded him. And he drove back the Philistines from Geba as far as Gezer. And that's what he did. He usually obeyed God's commands. But this is practice time. This is what we get. So what we need to do as parents and as grandparents is teach our children obedience. But we don't teach them obedience just like, I want you to obey me. It's that I want you to learn obedience so that as I obey God, you will learn to do that by practicing with us, with your parents, with your grandparents. And that's what we do. So it isn't just like, you have to obey me because I said so kind of thing. We want to bring in the spiritual component of this, that you are practicing so that you can be part of God's family forever. And that's why we train up children in the way that they should go. So we want to be true shepherds, the way David was in this case, and we want to be shepherds that show good examples in our flock. And what better way can you do that in our community than for those of you that are married right now and have been married, is that you show our young people, you show them what it's like to have a good marriage. They need positive examples today. So many marriages are breaking down in our community and there's so much trouble, at least in North America there is, and I imagine it's come over here to Australia as well. But our young people become disillusioned then. They start wondering, like, is it even worth getting married if this is the way it's going to be? We need to see brothers and sisters who have happy family lives. Show them that men and women can get along and have a good relationship. And this is what our young people need to see. And sure, we have our problems. We work through them. But we teach these children and our grandchildren then how to work through those problems. We get involved in their lives and we help them, rather than waiting for things to fall apart and then judging them for having fallen apart. Let's be brave and get involved and pray for God's guidance to help them and help our young kids today. Or our kids are looking to see when we have work days, when we have ecclesial work days, you know, are we there? Are we showing up? Can we do something? Now we've had folks that maybe we can't do a whole lot of work anymore, but we can at least provide some of the food for the people that are working. Or we can do our part. Our kids and our grandkids are looking to see if we're there. They want to see, did you really come? You know, and they get so encouraged when they see grandma and grandpa there at the ecclesial workday. Or out witnessing. You know, the same way when we have witnessing activities. And although we may not be able to walk as far anymore, there are things that we can do in our ecclesial preaching projects and we can still get involved. And our kids and our grandkids are watching to see if we're there. They're looking and they notice. And of course they notice when we pray for them and we get together and we pray for our ecclesia. And some of us, you know, as we get older, and maybe we can't do a whole lot anymore in terms of those other activities, but we can certainly pray for our ecclesias. We can pray for our families. This is why, you know, they refused to enroll the women that were under 60 in the widow's role. Because when Paul said that the older widows, they will pray. They'll be at home and they'll pray for the ecclesia. And this was valued as a very important thing to do. And the kids are looking to see if we're doing those kind of things. So those are the kind of things that we want to do, brothers and sisters, for all of us in our ecclesias today. And when you go back and look at really some of the things that we looked at today, let's remember that God designed our families to help train us to live in His family. It's all about living in His family forever, and it's by His design. So let's practice shepherding in our ecclesias today. Let's stay humble like David did so that we can serve where needed and not retaliate. And develop a contagious faith like David's, because what David did is he got all these other people together that were following him. And wherever he went, like Joseph, he'd find people that would be attracted to him. And let's accept disappointments in life. They're going to happen, the disappointments, and keep moving on. And that's the kind of character that David would have. And hopefully this week, as we go through some of these things, we're hoping to be kings for our God, brothers and sisters. That's our goal. We want to be part of God's family and reign as kings and priests on earth. That's what we want to do. So now is the time to practice. And let's make sure that next week we go home and we practice this in our families and our ecclesias so that we can be invited into God's family forever.